It's time for overtime.
I think I'm ready for this.
Heck yeah.
In the world of sport, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
It's in the left center field. That's hit well. That'll split the gap.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to an early middle of the week edition of Overtime as we crack it open on this Wednesday, May 20th edition of the program. The NBA continuing to roar. There is no way that game one of the Eastern Conference Finals could even be in the same ballpark as game one in the West, but we got it. And then some. Massive comeback last night. Overtime win. No contest in the overtime period. Knicks that much better than the Cavs in the end. 115-104, the final last night, as the Knicks win in front of a raucous home crowd that felt like a library early on in the fourth quarter. But you got to play to the final whistle, and Cleveland barely limped down the stretch as the Knicks capitalized, trailed by 22 in the fourth quarter to earn a game one win. The latest from the NBA, the Knicks finding a way. Latest odds and storylines coming up here in about 20 minutes. In about 40 minutes on a Wednesday, we test your wits with today's identity crisis. A former NFL football player on my mind, absurdly notable, had one of the darker stains on a college career heading into the National Football League. That's all the clues for now for the identity crisis coming up at the end of hour one. You identify who I'm talking about. You win the prize pack brought to you by the Original Pancake House, the very best in breakfast in all of the 605. We also get you your NFL news of the day, including really bad news for the Kansas City Chiefs at the end of hour one. Hour two, pair of great guests going to join us. After our headlines and highlights, we check in on Aggie baseball as they will face off with the Mules this week. Hee-haw of Central Missouri in the Super Regional. Augustana right back in another deep postseason run. Head coach Tim Huber will join us around 11:20 today. And we round out the show talking about the tough news for the Kansas City Chiefs, the Mahomes rehab, the Kelce reunion tour, one last ride for Travis Kelce, maybe three or four more years left for him as he's still pretty darn good. We'll be talking with Chris Clark of Locked On Chiefs before we're done today, right around 11:40. Let's get right into the scorecard and the epic comeback at MSG last night. The crowd was dead. It was over until it wasn't. A 22-point fourth quarter lead. Jalen Brunson and his team engineering an improbable come-from-behind win. Here's Brunson himself on the talk to his teammates during that stretch.
Keep fighting. Keep chipping away. You know, we're not going to get it back in one possession. Most importantly, sticking together. You know, no matter how that game finished, habits translate. And so they get transferred to the next game. So just finishing the game strong, regardless of whatever's going on, making sure we're having the right habits. So, you know, we'll be going to the next game. You know, we're doing what we're doing. You know, we're not just giving up. No, we don't want to give up ever. And so just having faith in each other.
That's Jalen Brunson, who finished with 38 points. A team I had six assists as well. Head coach Mike Brown, pretty honest post-game about their intentions late in the comeback bid.
They were trying to do the same thing with Jalen. And so we said, okay, you know, we feel like we can play that game. We try not to play that game much, but we feel like we have a guy that we can play that game with and Jalen. And so, you know, just like we have to try to figure out different ways to guard Harden and Mitchell, they got to figure out different ways to guard Jalen. But there's no secret, we were attacking Harden.
We were attacking James Harden. Now on the other side, Kenny Atkinson criticized today for numerous reasons, leaving James Harden on the floor, not using timeouts early in the rally, middle of the rally, late in the rally, even on the final possession in which they had an opportunity to win the game in regulation. Kenny Atkinson asked if he ever considered benching James Harden late in the game.
No. Listen, he's been one of our best defenders in these playoffs. I trust him. You know, smart, great hands. Didn't think about that. James was good most of the game. Listen, we weren't great defensively in the fourth quarter, you know. And like I said, you know, the ball stuck a little bit too much You know, that was a key.
That was a key. Cleveland falling in game one in overtime, 115-104. They fall behind 1-0 in the series. And again, Jalen Brunson, the leader, 38.6 assists in the win. Myron Metcalf just saying, James Harden, you had just one job last night.
James Harden has to impact the game somehow. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, if you're not going to be good defensively, you have to be an effective offensive player.
Right.
Like, you have to do something. That's why you were brought to Cleveland. To impact moments just like that. You're up 22. The crazy thing is, Q, no one was asking him to be a legend.
Right.
Like, James Harden didn't have to play like a Hall of Famer in that moment. He just had to not be terrible. And he couldn't avoid that on either side of the ball. And I just don't know how you adjust. Mike Brown said that to make it very clear that they don't care if the Cavs know it. And right. that's how confident you know that they are.
And that's how confident they are. New York winning 115-104. Certainly a massive win for them and a gut punch for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's hear from Q Myers now on somebody from Cleveland just needed to step up last night and will need to step up the rest of the way.
Yeah, no, you got to take your game to the next level, right? I mean, we always talk about it in here. You know, the superstars, they're able to, you know, get their team, put them on their back, and when they need them the most, make some plays happen. And at some point when you're up 22 and you're losing and you're feeling Uncle Mo leave your sideline and go to the other sideline, when you hear Madison Square Garden getting louder and louder and louder, at some point you got to say, come on, give me the rock. Here I go. Right? Yeah. And that's what the all-time greats will do. And I'm not trying to slight Donovan Mitchell. I'm not trying to even slight James Harden. But someone has to have an answer.
And that is the latest there on the Knicks' triumph over the Cavaliers, 115-104. More on New York. This is Christian Winfield of the New York Daily News talking about the importance of OG Anunoby in the lineup.
Oh, it's not even a question. OG wasn't even fully healthy today. Let's be real. He was wearing a wrap around his right leg while he was on the bench. He was moving a little slow. I think he shot something like 2-9 from the field. Like, it wasn't a good shooting performance from him, but just his gravity out there, his size, his defensive IQ, offensive IQ, his ability to cut off the ball. And then we saw late in the game, the Knicks went to him and he's able to go to the free throw line. And he missed one, but, you know, he's able to put pressure on the rim and he's able to put pressure on a defense from three-point range and from mid-range. The Knicks are significantly a better team when OG Anunoby is healthy and out there. And it's scary because I think if I had to put a percentage on where OG Anunoby is right now, I'd say maybe 75%. He did not look like himself out there fully. And once he is able to heal up all the way, look out because the Knicks are coming.
That is Christian Winfield of the New York Daily News. Now let's hear from the big news in the NBA just recently. That is Kendrick Perkins talking about the Dallas Mavericks making a change in head coach Jason Kidd out as of the last couple hours.
Well, this was way past due. This relationship had been run this course. J. Kidd wanted out of Dallas last year once they traded Luka. He's not a coach that's with the rebuilding. He's a coach that wants to win championships. And so when you think about where they're headed, they traded Anthony Davis. Yes, he done an outstanding job for us building up and putting Cooper Flagg in the right position. But Jay Kidd is a coach that wants to win now. He is not looking in the near future or looking down the line 5 or 6 years from now. And so he wanted to go his own separate ways, and rightfully so. And I'm going to say this. Jay Kidd is just the first domino to fall. I wouldn't be surprised in the next 2 to 3 weeks if we see some more movement in that Mavericks organization for as a guy named Kyrie Irving.
All right, so that's the latest there in regards to the move. Jason Kidd out as the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. Not necessarily a massive surprise given the change in the front office. Of course, guys want to have their people around them when they take over a new position, just like Masai Ujiri is doing there in Dallas. But certainly notable, Jason Kidd no longer the head coach of the Cooper Flagg-led Dallas Mavericks. Over to the NHL. Actually, tonight in the NBA, Spurs and the Thunder collide from OKC Game 2, 7:30 on NBC. San Antonio, of course, leads the series 1-0. Thunder favorite to get right back into it. A 6.5-point favorite on their home floor tonight. Stanley Cup playoffs are set. They begin tonight in the Western Conference Finals. Golden Knights of Las Vegas visiting the Colorado Avalanche in Denver, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Colorado a -190 favorite on the puck line. And then tomorrow night, Canadiens and Hurricanes open it up in the Eastern Conference Finals, 7 o'clock on TNT. Carolina -200. pretty heavy favorite in game one. A reminder, USHL Hockey, the Sioux Falls Stampede are one game away from winning their fourth ever Clark Cup as they lead 2-0 in the series against the Muskegon Lumberjacks. Game three Friday from Muskegon, Michigan, 6:10, the start time. Central, Major League Baseball, Cleveland beat Detroit 4-3, Boston over Kansas City 7-1, and Minnesota got another nice start from Zebby Matthews, who took the loss. He's 1-1. 2-1 was the final yesterday to Houston. Here is Zebby Matthews on his outing and the nice starts lately in a pair of starts on the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's encouraging, you know, when you can do that and you feel good throughout the whole start. Was able to hold the stuff in the below. So, yeah, we'll keep building on that.
That's Zebby Matthews. And now for the coach on Zebby Matthews, Derek Shelton, the manager, talking about the youngsters' outing yesterday.
Yeah, I thought he was really good. I mean, you know, he gave up the base hit and then the homer. He made a bad pitch on the homer. But, I mean, other than that, pitch well. I think the thing that was the most impressive is in the sixth inning, you know, pitch 85 to 100 or 84 to 100. I mean, his stuff continued to tick up. Not just the velocity was there, but just the sharpness of the sharpness of the total repertoire.
So the Twins took a loss yesterday at home to Houston, 2-1 the final. Minnesota's new record, 22-27. But the on-field paled in comparison to the off-field news yesterday. Ryan Jeffers going to be out a while with a broken hamate bone in his hand. Here's Jeffers on that recovery.
I wouldn't call it disappointing. It's an unfortunate time. But, you know, if you're going to have an injury, like having like the most predictable, like, you know, it's such a straightforward timeline, such a straightforward surgery. It's completely out of my control. You know, it doesn't matter how much I prepared my body to be healthy and get ready for the season. You know, this was something that was just going to happen. I don't think it puts a damper on anything what I was doing. You know, there's a chance I'm back in 4.5-5 weeks and we're ready to rip again. So, like, I'm not going to put like a set timetable on it, but there's plenty of guys who come back in 4 weeks or some guys who come back in 6 weeks. It kind of just comes down to how you feel when you start moving again. But the timelines are pretty predictable. It's a predictable surgery. The outcomes are pretty predictable. So if I'm going to get hurt with anything, I'd rather it be something that, you know, it's a one-time thing. It doesn't go on the injury report going forward. And we, you know, we kind of move on. I come back with over half the season left to go.
So Ryan Jeffers coming back in the near future. Again, a broken hamate bone in his hand wrist area. That's the latest there on the Twins catcher. Now for former number one overall pick Royce Lewis, he was sent down to the minors yesterday. Here is Jeremy Zoll, Twins general manager, on that decision in regards to why Royce Lewis was optioned.
You know, I think on all these things, it's a multitude of factors for any player that struggles. You know, there's a variety of components. Obviously, since Royce came back from his brief stint on the IL this year, you know, his numbers haven't been where anyone are hoping that they'd be. But we also know there's a really good player in there that's had a ton of great moments for this organization, and I think there still are more to come here. So, you know, building back that confidence and finding the mechanical adjustments, give him that time in AAA, I think will be really valuable. You know, we know how hard it can be to make those adjustments on the fly at the major league level with how good the pitching is each night, and hopeful this reset will get him going.
That's all for the Twins for now. Again, a 2-1 loser yesterday at home to Houston, 22-27, the new record. Other notables, Milwaukee continues their ascent, and the Cubbies starting to flounder a little bit. Milwaukee wins at Wrigley 5-2 yesterday. Brew Crew 28-18. Chicago falling to 29-20. One other notable final, White Sox keep on winning. They beat Seattle in Seattle yesterday 2-1. Chicago 25-23. Good for second in the AL Central right now. Today and tonight, we're on the air early because the Twins are on the air early. Pregame coverage at noon, going for a series victory against the Astros. 12:40, the start to the game today. Other matchups on the way, Rangers at Rockies, White Sox at Mariners, Guardians at Tigers, 5:40, Red Sox at Royals, Brewers at Cubs, Pirates at Cardinals. The nightcap gets going from St. Louis at 6:45. The National Football League, pretty light on news relatively yesterday, but one big bad story out of Kansas City. Rashee Rice taken into custody, set to serve 30 days in jail for violation of his probation. Here's Chris Canty on the Chiefs receiver.
I cannot explain this. This is a self-inflicted wound to the nth degree. This is on the Kansas City Chiefs. It's on Rashee Rice. I don't understand how you continue to put yourself in this type of situation. You had a 5-year deferred sentence for this 30 days in jail that you had to serve because of the car crash several years ago. You're undergoing testing for substances of abuse, particularly marijuana. I don't understand how you are aware of all of these things, and yet you continue behaviors to put yourself in the crosshairs with law enforcement. What are you doing?
Seems pretty darn inexcusable for Rashee Rice. And even worse news to boot is that Rice recently just had knee surgery. And again, not major knee, not reconstructive of a ligament or anything, but a cleanup procedure similar to what we saw from Malik Nabers. And now going to be in jail for 30 days. Who knows about medical care, rehab ability for Rashee Rice. Certainly really tough news for the young Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver yesterday. A reminder from the tennis and golf world, French Open around the corner, May 23rd, the Open, June 7th will be the close there. From Roland Garros, the PGA Tour makes its way to the CJ Cup Byron Nelson this weekend. U.S. Open around the corner, June 18th through the 21st. D1 softball action continuing down the road in Lincoln, the Lincoln Super Regional, Thursday at 8 o'clock on ESPN2, fourth national seed Nebraska visiting or taking on hosting 13th seed Oklahoma State. That is Thursday at 8, Friday at 4, Saturday game 3 if necessary at 4 on ESPN. And of course, D2 baseball, Augustana continuing their dance into the Super Regional round. The action begins Thursday against the Mules of Central Missouri, Thursday at 5, Friday at 5, Saturday at 1 o'clock, if necessary, for game number 3. Well, the biggest news in our neck of the woods was pretty darn brief down the road in Vermilion yesterday, but earth-shattering news regardless, fresh off of a tremendous season in which they reached new heights as a program, won their first ever Summit League tournament title, made their way to their first ever NCAA tournament, won their first ever NCAA tournament game, went toe-to-toe with one of the top teams in the country. USD Coyote softball is making a change at head coach. And again, the statement from USD themselves was pretty darn brief. Here it is. South Dakota Athletics announced today, as in yesterday, that there will be a change in leadership for the softball program. A national search will begin immediately for the next South Dakota softball head coach. We got the story up pretty quickly, ESPNSiouxFalls.com yesterday. Matt Zimmer tagged in that article, noting a couple nuts and bolts just days after USD softball made history. Zimmer says Robert Wagner no longer the Yotes head coach. He says he stepped down. School released a terse statement that did not mention his name. And again, no update to that statement just yet, but Robert Wagner, the coach at USD, just prior to yesterday, did post a commentary on social media as well, indicating he did step down. I'm going to read that right now. For my entire adult life, I've been a United States Marine and coach. That's my resume. USD gave me the opportunity to live out my dreams. My family and I have given everything to the USD softball program and Vermilion for the last 10 years. This year's team accomplished things that had never been done in the 48-year history of the program. It has always been my intention to finish my career at USD. Therefore, I'll be stepping away as the head coach of USD softball. Thank you to all the players who have given so much to the program, to the current team. Well done. We left it all on the field. Now, how does USD softball, where does USD softball go from here? The obvious answer is a coach that was an assistant this year, Coach Shannon Pivovar, who certainly had her magic moment, had her viral moment from the NCAA tournament, the I'm so proud of you clip. If you haven't seen it yet, look it up. Coach Piv certainly earning a lot of credo there for a rock solid coach that we know very well here from her time in Sioux Falls. But that is the obvious pivot here for USD to go to Coach Piv. The ability she has, the experience she has as a coach, and then also to capitalize on this year's team, this year's staff, to keep the players around. If it's not Piv, what kind of turnover do you have in the program? That's always a concern. You can talk about the move off of Coach Jimmy Rogers, Coach Stig up in Brookings, that transition now into Coach Jackson or down in Vermilion with Coach Bob Nielsen, Coach Travis Johansson, now into Coach Vitztham. It's interesting when you make a coaching change nowadays, depending upon how woven into the fabric of the program the coach is and the hire behind them, you might have a lot of turnover. So we'll wait and see. Keep you updated, of course, on the latest and greatest news in regards to that coaching search. But again, that news item, the quote from Zimmer and the statement from Coach Robert Wagner available in that article, ESPNSiouxFalls.com, as the Yotes softball program, fresh off a historically good season, making a change at head coach. The South Dakota State baseball team returns to the Summit League baseball tournament this week, entering the four-team double elimination tournament As the four seed, the Jacks earned their trip to Minneapolis after finishing fourth in the standings with a 12-15 mark on the season. SDSU will face longtime nemesis Oral Roberts at noon today in the opening game of the four-day tournament, which will be played at the University of Minnesota's Seibert Field. The Golden Eagles earned the top seed. They're 22-6 in Summit League play. New tournament champion will be crowned this weekend, as last year's champion NDSU did not qualify for this year's tournament field. Today's game one at noon, SDSU Oral Roberts. Then the 3-2 matchup is Northern Colorado and Omaha, slated to get going at 6 o'clock. And again, the loser of game one against the loser of game two will be in action tomorrow at noon. Winner and winner game will be tomorrow at 6 o'clock as well from Minneapolis. GoJacks.com for the latest there. For the fifth time in six seasons, the Augustana baseball team will be playing postseason baseball in Warrensburg, Missouri. The Vikings will take on 22nd-ranked Central Missouri yet again, this time in the NCAA Super Regional Round. The best-of-three series begins at 5 o'clock Thursday, 5 o'clock Friday, and the if-necessary game will take place 1 o'clock on Saturday as the two teams play for a region title and an opportunity to play in the NCAA D2 College World Series in Cary, North Carolina. They got a full preview up right now at GoAuggie.com. And we conclude our ReliaBank headlines of the day with some pretty darn cool sports crossover news. Caitlin Clark, always on the move in the sports world. She is making her way to the racetrack. She will serve as the Grand Marshal of the Indy 500 on Sunday. Race officials announced just yesterday the Fever Star will give the traditional command for drivers to report to their cars before the 110th edition at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Clark said in a statement, "I'm honored to represent Gainbridge as the Grand Marshal of the Indy 500. Looking forward to experiencing an iconic piece of what makes Indiana so special and being a part of a time-honored tradition of the greatest spectacle in racing." Caitlin Clark serving as the Grand Marshal at the Indy 500 coming up on Sunday. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day. Certainly big news down the road in Vermilion. We'll keep you updated there. Latest and greatest updates. Give us a follow on Twitter at ESPN Sioux Falls. When we come back, we reset it. Just how big of a gut punch was it last night for the Cleveland Cavaliers? How do you come back from that after such an energy expense? You're whooping up on the Knicks on the road until you weren't. They go down 1-0, but how big of a hole is that ahead of game two? Latest odds, storylines, and more from the NBA coming up next on an early Wednesday edition of Overtime. We're back after this on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Don't miss a moment of local college and pro sports action. Stay connected and download the app for Overtime on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Moving right along, an early edition of Overtime on a Wednesday, on the air at 10, off the air at noon, making way for the Minnesota Twins and their hunt for a series win against the Houston Astros. Took game one, fell yesterday 2-1. Game three coming up at 12:40 this afternoon. Let's talk hockey, NBA before we are done here in this segment. Latest odds and storylines in both leagues on the way. Cal McCarr sat out another practice session yesterday on the eve of the Western Conference Finals getting going against the Vegas Golden Knights. Any cause for concern over the health status of the Avalanche defenseman? No, Coach Jared Bednar said, not yet. McCarr, a Norris Trophy finalist, left the ice following a collision late in Game 5 against Minnesota, only to return as Colorado won the game and the second-round series 4-3. In overtime, the 27-year-old McCarr has 4 goals and an assist while averaging nearly 25 minutes of ice time through the first 2 rounds for the Avs. He's a crucial part of their offensive and special teams plans. Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals begin tonight. Golden Knights in Denver, 7 o'clock on ESPN, and the Avalanche favored -190 on the puck line. Thursday night, Canadiens and Hurricanes from Raleigh, 7 o'clock on TNT. Carolina a -200 favorite. Other news from the NHL, Vancouver Canucks are making a change. Head coach Adam Foote and his staff were fired yesterday as new general manager Ryan Johnson cleaned house just 5 days into taking the job. Assistant coaches Scott Young, Kevin Dean, and Brett McLean were also relieved of their duties. According to a team announcement, it was a challenging year on several fronts, and truthfully, Adam and his staff were dealt a very difficult hand. Johnson said in a statement, that said, as we head into a rebuild, our group feels like new coaching voices are needed to chart the path forward. Establishing the proper environment and culture is a vital first step in creating a solid and authentic connection throughout the entire organization. The 54-year-old Foote completed his first season as an NHL head coach with a record of 25-49-8 as Vancouver finished with the league's worst record. Kind of a bygone, foregone conclusion here that with a new general manager, likely there would be some changes at the coaching staff. That's exactly what we got to tell you about in the NBA as we transition across leagues here. Jason Kidd is out as the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks after 5 years at the post in what the team described as a mutual decision that occurred last night. Kidd still had 4 years and more than $40 million remaining on his contract, according to ESPN, but Mavericks Governor Patrick Dumont, who extended Kidd's contract during Dallas's NBA Finals run back in 2024, and again before last season, after they declined the New York Knicks' request to interview him, gave new president Masai Ujiri full authorization to determine the coach's future with the franchise. Ujiri saying in a statement, as we evaluate the future of our program, we believe this is the right moment for a new direction. We have high expectations for the franchise and a responsibility to build a basketball organization capable of sustained championship contention. We will conduct a thorough, disciplined search for our new head coach and continue to evaluate our entire basketball operations staff. Jason Kidd, again, over the last 5 years, missed the playoffs 3 times, lost in the NBA Finals in 2024, lost in the conference finals all the way back in 2022. Jason Kidd out as the Dallas Mavericks head coach after 5 years on the job. Well, the Eastern Conference Finals has been undersold and underbilled because the Western Conference Finals has the star power and more than likely the two best teams remaining. But last night certainly was an entertaining game one for all the wrong reasons. For the visiting team, it wasn't quite a matter of pettiness, but the Knicks found their idea for an improbable comeback thanks to the Cavaliers trying to exploit Jalen Brunson on defense, trailing by 22 points with just over 8 minutes to go in the fourth of Tuesday's game one. The Knicks had Brunson go in the opposite direction, directly at veteran James Harden. The result was a 44-11 run by New York in the fourth quarter and overtime to complete one of the greatest comebacks in the history of the NBA with a 115-104 win. You got to do what the game dictates. Knicks head coach Mike Brown said they were doing the same thing with Jalen, so we said two could play that game. According to ESPN Analytics, the Cavaliers had a 99.9% chance of winning with 7 minutes and 49 seconds to go in the contest. The Cavaliers' rhythm was winning out against the Knicks' rust after New York had 9 days off following the sweep of the Sixers, and the Cavaliers were getting great looks by going at Brunson and Knicks big man Karl-Anthony Towns. Something flipped with New York, according to ESPN.com. Began with Brunson dictating switches on Harden, who didn't seem to have the legs to keep up. Brunson scored 16 of his game-high 38 in the fourth. Harden shot 1 of 6 from the field. And I will say this, too. You can go after James Harden on the defensive end. Without a doubt, he deserves all sorts of criticism. The video is damning. When you're watching it live, you weren't really thinking about who is the defender. Who is the closeout guy on that three from the corner? Who was off the ball on this one? And the answer, more than likely last night, in most of those scenarios, was, oh, it was James Harden. What the heck is he doing? Get him out of the game. Call a timeout, coach. And they didn't do any of that for the Cavaliers. But also damning for them was the shot selection, the pace of play, and the ability to generate a shot that was a clean look offensively. The only bucket I really remember was a big three that was too little too late from Max Strus. They also had a decent bucket late in the fourth quarter, another three ball. I can't remember by who, but the shot selection was atrocious by Donovan Mitchell, by James Harden. It was hero ball, not using up the clock. It was a exercise in what not to do while having a massive fourth quarter lead. Quality possessions were few and far between. So yeah, everything comes unglued for Cleveland. Not a good look. And it leaves you to question, not to overreact to game ones. Like we heard Brian Windhorst say yesterday, I've got this longstanding rule in my career covering college or pro basketball, not to ever overreact to a game one of an NBA series. Well, you can overreact to San Antonio beating OKC and say, changing of the guard, it's all over. It's Wemby. They're the best team to beat. They're the team to beat in the West and in the NBA. And we're seeing a big change there at the top. That is your overreaction there. Now, your overreaction in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals, to me, is a little bit more valid than that, because when a team comes out and has a 22-point road fourth-quarter lead, a 99.9% chance of winning, you expel all of that energy, you have all that confidence start to circle around the drain, and before long, there's no water left in the drain. You're done for. And in overtime, what did it feel like to you? Because watching that game last night, it was a team that was wanting to win the game against a team that was out of gas, completely and totally foot off the pedal, out of gas for Cleveland. So for me, let's overreact. I think this series is done. And again, famous last words, overreacting to a game one, but I think the Knicks have all the juice, have all the confidence. This game two, coming up tomorrow night, going to be absurdly important just to see what the Cavaliers look like. What kind of confidence can they bring into game two after such a gut punch in game one? You'd almost rather lose by 10, 15, 20 points in regulation in game one and come back and say, you know what, we didn't play our best. Here we go. Best foot forward game two. But Cavaliers did play their best for the majority of the game last night, and it wasn't good enough in the end. So certainly a big gut punch. We'll see how they respond coming up tomorrow night. Cavaliers head coach Kenny Atkinson defending, holding on to his timeouts down the stretch. I like to hold my timeouts. I didn't want to have one timeout at the end of the game, 1 or 2 point game. I tried to hold them. They had some really tough shots in that fourth quarter. Got a little unlucky, quite honestly. That also is true. My only regret, and this can happen when you get a little fatigued, is I think I just stopped moving. We were pinging the ball all over the place. Great ball movement. Then got a little stagnant. Absolutely did. Exactly what I told you about a minute ago. The shot selection, the hero ball, the inability to pass the basketball, create an open look, rally off a screen, pick and roll. Anything offensively was absent in the last 3-4 minutes for the Cleveland Cavaliers. It was a foregone conclusion. Train wreck you can't look away from last night for Cleveland, and they are down, not out in the series, 1-0. Latest odds check here. Spurs are a 6.5-point dog on the road at OKC for game two. And that's the same spread for game two in the East. Cavaliers a 6.5-point dog at MSG coming up tomorrow night. That's the latest from the NBA. Little sprinkle of NHL talk as well. Cale Makar likely to be in the lineup tonight for the Colorado Avalanche as one of the game's team's most important players. Avalanche home to the Golden Knights, 7 o'clock on ESPN. And tonight in the NBA, Spurs and the Thunder from OKC, game two, 7:30 on NBC. When we come back, it's time to test your wits. If you know ball, as in football, you know this name. The identity crisis coming up next. You can win an ESPN Sioux Falls t-shirt, an OPH gift card, and more by telling me who the heck I'm talking about. The identity crisis and the latest NFL news of the day coming up next on a Wednesday edition of Overtime.
It's so on the go. Download the free app now. This is ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Wednesday, May 20th edition of Overtime. We like to test your wits in the middle of the week with a mystery man or woman, sports figure, former player, former coach, current player, current coach. And today we dive into the world of football. A former NFL player worth noting today on my mind for the identity crisis on a Wednesday. Let's hit it.
What do you know about Ray Finkel?
Soccer-style kicker. Graduated from Collier High, June 1976. Stetson University Honors graduate, class of 1980. Holds two NCAA Division I records, one for most points in a season, one for distance. Former nicknamed the Mule, the first and only pro athlete ever to come out of Collier County, and one hell of a model American.
Well, this is exhausting. Let's see if you can tell us the sports figure we're talking about in today's identity crisis on Overtime.
As always, the rules go with the identity crisis. As soon as I start giving clues and you have a feeling about the answer, 605-362-3776, the number to dial. The identity crisis brought to you by the original Pancake House in Sioux Falls. You can find crispy, thick bacon, always hot coffee, huge omelets, fresh squeezed OJ, and so much more. All served with a smile, always at the original Pancake House here in Sioux Falls. 605-362-3776. This is a memorable name, so I would imagine a one-off, one caller, one win right now. Former NFL running back, your first clue. Played in the NFL from 2010 to 2018. This particular player started his college career at East Mississippi Community College, a.k.a. Last Chance U. He finished at the University of Oregon as a Duck. He wore number 27 and number 29 in his NFL career. And lastly, he played for the Bucks, Patriots, Steelers, Eagles, and Lions throughout his career. Never a great player, but always a very good running back. 605-362-3776. That number, 605-362-3776. Who am I talking about today? Running back, 2010 to 2018. Most notably an Oregon Duck in college. Number 27 and number 29. Played for the Bucks, Patriots, Steelers, Eagles, and Lions. Over to line number one we go. You're on with Overtime. What's your name?
Oh, the legend of LeGarrette Blount.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I was at the game in Boise when he took matters into his own hands after a tough loss there. Three-time Super Bowl champ, 1,000-yard rusher as well. Probably one of the most, you know, from that moment in Boise to how he ended up, you know, making it 8 years, a couple rings. You know, pretty great turnaround. Hey, so
just to make
shout out LB.
Hey, just to make you feel old, that was coming up on 17 years ago. LeGarrette Blount's famous punch of Byron Hout. Congratulations, you're our winner. What's your name, by the way?
Elliot.
Elliot. What's the last initial for you, Elliot? I'll get a prize pack for you at the front desk.
N.
Elliot N. And a shirt size for Elliot N. What you got? I'm up to an XL and they run pretty big.
Yeah, I'm a medium, so we'll go medium.
Medium.
We'll go medium.
Sounds good. Yeah. Elliot, I'll have the prize pack for you at the front desk. That's a dude that knows his stuff. Elliot N., our big winner on today's identity crisis, LeGarrette Blount. I didn't want to give you the obvious, this dude knocked somebody out, punched somebody at midfield after a game against Oregon and Boise, because that's too obvious, at least I think in sports fandom. Oh, yeah, LeGarrette Blount, but that's an underappreciated NFL career. Really darn good back considering all the hurdles and obstacles. 1,000 yards as a rookie, including a ridiculous touchdown run against my Packers with Tampa back in 2010. And then didn't get 1,000 yards again in his career until 7 years later, 2016 with the Patriots. And he was a touchdown vulture, touchdown machine. You think about fantasy football, there were a lot of dang it, LeGarrette Blount, because he finished so many drives by plunging into the end zone from a yard or two out. He had 56 rushing touchdowns in his career, 6,300 yards, and over an average of 17 games, 800 yards, 7 touchdowns. Nice career for one LeGarrette Blount, and congratulations to Elliot, our big winner of today's identity crisis. Now, let's get into the NFL news of the day. The Minnesota Vikings are in the news, and for good reason. They signed their second-round draft pick, linebacker Jake Golday of Cincinnati, to his 4-year rookie deal just yesterday. Minnesota now has their entire 9-player draft class under deals. The Vikings selected Golday with pick number 51, played defensive end for 2 years at Central Arkansas out of the FCS before switching to linebacker at Cincinnati. And in 2024, he began his career with the Bearcats. This past season, 105 tackles, 6 TFLs, 3.5 sacks, 3 breakups, and a forced fumble last year. Jake Golday hoping to play a big part in that Brian Flores-led Minnesota Vikings defense. Speaking of those Vikings, Pro Football Talk on the news that they're moving closer to making a decision on the future general manager. Owner Mark Wilf said at yesterday's league meetings that the team has reached the end of their first round of exploratory interviews for the post. The Vikings fired Gwesidafa Mensah back in March of this offseason. Excuse me, I think that was January this offseason. And executive vice president of football operations Rob Brzezinski has been handling the responsibilities on a temporary basis, which he hopes will be a permanent basis. Brzezinski wants the job. Now we're going to go more in-depth in the coming days, more in-person versus virtual, and I'm sure we'll have some great conversations. Brzezinski, a candidate for the job on a permanent basis. Other candidates, Niners assistant GM R.J. Gillen, Bills assistant GM Terrence Gray, Rams assistant GM John McKay, and so many more. You can view that article, Pro Football Talk, at NBCSports.com. The really bad news yesterday centered around the Kansas City Chiefs and young wide receiver Rashee Rice, who is no stranger to getting in off-the-field trouble and got in some more yesterday. This is the latest. He has been sentenced to serve 30 days in jail after testing positive for marijuana in violation of the terms of his probation for his role in a crash that left multiple people injured on a Dallas highway 2 years ago. The Texas State Attorney's Office said yesterday that Rice was ordered to go to jail immediately as part of his original 30-day sentence for the third-degree felony of racing and causing bodily injury. Mr. Rice was taken into custody in the 194th Judicial District Court for testing positive for THC in order to serve the 30 days that he had previously been ordered to serve at a later time, starting immediately. That's according to the Dallas County DA's office. Rice had received deferred adjudication after pleading guilty, and the case would have been dismissed if he had completed the probation. But during this probationary period, testing positive for THC, placed into custody, booked into the Dallas County Jail yesterday afternoon, set to be released on June 16th. The Chiefs have voluntary practices that begin next week in mandatory minicamp that is set to end on June 11th. So he's going to miss all of that. And more so than the legality here and what he's going to miss this offseason, Rashee Rice also, in terms of the future playing career, had surgery on his right knee just last week. A cleanup procedure to remove loose debris that was causing inflammation. Rice expected to be sidelined 2 months for the injury, but is expected to be ready for training camp later this summer. But it is worth noting, now in a Dallas County jail, Rice will be unable to get the type of medical attention and rehab that he could have, that could have expedited his return from last week's surgery. Certainly a very ugly situation. If you're familiar with Rashee Rice, you know he's a really good, dynamic young receiver. He's the best receiver on Kansas City by a mile. But the off-field antics, off-field legal troubles and issues have been many for Rashee Rice. And certainly that continued yesterday, now in jail for the next 29 days. The NFL believes the Chicago Bears will soon make their choice between a new indoor stadium in Illinois and a new indoor stadium in Indiana. Not going to call it 50-50. We don't really know the way it leans, the financials, the tax incentives, the support. But I did hear a report out there that somebody in the Illinois side of the argument made a suggestion that the Hammond, Indiana site was nearby hazardous waste. And if you've been through that area, might not necessarily surprise you. No offense intended to you Northwest Indianers, Indianans, Northwest Hoosiers. There we go. But the NFL and the Chicago Bears have a big decision coming. Is it going to be Arlington Park in a dome there where the Bears can host a Super Bowl and a draft and so much more? Or will it be across the border in Hammond, Indiana, which is not all that too far away relative to the city of Chicago? But to me, I'm rooting for the suburbs of Chicago because it is the Chicago Bears after all. And more teams rooted in where we call them is good for the NFL instead of the New Jersey, New York Jets, the New Jersey, New York Giants, and a couple other examples out there in the National Football League. Speaking of the National Football League broadly, the NFL yesterday approved the ability to play as many as 10 international games starting just next year. That is up from 8 previously. There's a path to 10 international games next year. Executive Vice President of Club Business Peter O'Reilly said from the NFL Spring League meeting, the league also voted to strip teams' ability to protect any home games from international play. Previously, teams could protect 2 games. The 2026 slate features 9 international contests, 8 league-run games, and 1 London game as part of an agreement with the Jacksonville Jaguars and Wembley Stadium. Playing that 9th game required NFLPA approval as collectively bargained, and now the league is scratching out 10 games, which is going to go north of that before long. This year's host sites internationally, Melbourne, Australia, Rio de Janeiro, London, 3 games there, Paris, Madrid, Munich, and Mexico City. The league is also scouting future sites. This is great for the league. It's great for the pockets. It's great for the eyes and the ears and the exposure of the NFL. Very tough on the players, the coaches, the bodies, and of course the schedule management in the National Football League. It's been interesting to me to see about how the NFL structures home games and away games, and the home team in Australia or the home team out in Munich, how much of a disadvantage that is for a team that may have 9 home games or 8 home games in a year. One of them is going to be not even close to a home atmosphere. They'll bring your cheerleaders. They'll put some additional signage up. But is there really crowd support to indicate you're a home team? Doesn't feel fair. We'll see how it all hashes out in the future, because this is not going to get any less prevalent moving forward. An update on Atlanta Falcons young quarterback Michael Penix Jr. He is now back to participating in practice following ACL surgery in November and said he's planning to be ready for week 1. Let the games begin. Tua and Penix quarterback battle in the ATL. Ever since I got hurt, that's been the goal, Penix said yesterday. At the same time, I got to focus on the right now. And right now, I got to do whatever I can to be better each and every day. Penix said he started throwing again in mid-March and feels mostly normal at this stage. He's been doing indie drills during practice as well as 7-on-7 sessions, though he has not yet started competing in 11-on-11 team sessions, according to his coach, Kevin Stefanski. Penix tore his ACL in a game against the Panthers in week 11. So a little bit more of a runway for him relative to Patrick Mahomes and Micah Parsons and Zach Charbonnet and many other guys dealing with similar injuries. Penix should be on a calendar back week 1. But the issue with him, as was well noted in the pre-draft process and even during his college career, wow, that kid can play. Wow, he can move. What a natural spin of the football. One of the better arms we've seen, pure arm talent we've seen in recent memory is in the canon of Michael Penix Jr. But the issue, as well noted in college, into pros, and now a couple of years into his pro career, is the dude has had a long and very complex injury history. Hip issues, knee issues a couple times over. Michael Penix Jr., all the best in recovery. But again, a lot of people saying, okay, that's great. Stay on the football field, and then we'll talk about an ascension in your young career. Michael Penix Jr. back on the practice field as of this week. And lastly here, a couple updates from the NFL. Bills wide receiver Keon Coleman put the importance of his third season in the NFL simply saying yesterday, for me, it's make or break. If you're bad, you might not be here. Simple as that. Simply put, I know what I'm capable of. So if I fall anything short of that, I'm going to do myself a disservice and a disservice to my team for a variety of reasons, including the unprompted remarks and pot shots from team owner Terry Pegula. The outside talk about Coleman has been extensive this offseason. If the Bills can get anything out of Keon Coleman, that's a big win at this stage. Hopefully, this offense can take off and take flight now that Coleman is not viewed as the future wide receiver one, the guy that needs to take up the role that was vacated by Stephon Diggs. That was what Keon Coleman was viewed as. That's why we're viewing him through such a critical lens. Also included in that is the high draft position. But now they've got DJ Moore. They've retained Khalil Shakir. They brought in Skylar Bell, a young receiver. The Bills have a lot of other options, and maybe Keon Coleman is just a good serviceable wide receiver 3. Maybe that's his ceiling. Maybe he's a really good outside boundary X receiver that is not a first-round pedigree, future Stephon Diggs replacement kind of guy. And that's fair. We'll see what he can develop into this year, but a make-or-break year, in the words of Keon Coleman just yesterday. And lastly, an update on Brian Flores's continued lawsuit against the National Football League. It intensified this week after court filings revealed that Flores' legal team had served subpoenas to 25 NFL teams and served more than 1,000 discovery requests in an attempt to obtain league-wide hiring records and communications related to discrimination claims. The court filing did not identify which 25 teams were subpoenaed. The NFL, Denver Broncos, Giants, and Texans, the defendants currently contesting Flores' claims, argued in response that the requests are punishingly overboard. But Flores' attorneys say the information is necessary to prove systemic discrimination in hiring practices across the league. This has been going on for a very long time. He was fired back in January of 2022. And then the infamous courtship and interviews in Denver and New York and Houston and the infamous congrats, Brian, text from Bill Belichick. Oh, whoops. Wrong Brian. Congrats, Brian Daboll, not Brian Flores on the Giants gig. That kind of got this whole thing going a little bit deeper. January 10th of 2022, let go in Miami in this lawsuit filed shortly thereafter as Brian Flores' lawsuit against the NFL and a trio of teams thus far continuing as of yesterday. That's hour number one on a Wednesday edition of Overtime. When we come back, headlines and highlights. Auggie baseball head coach Tim Huber and Kansas City Chiefs talk. Draft rewind, offseason preview with Chris Clark of Locked On Chiefs before we're done on this Wednesday early edition of Overtime.